Can I have some coffee?
But of course, my young coffee-speaking friend, because it's mocha latte time. This week on Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World, frozen water hoses in Pikeville, Kentucky, the long-awaited introduction to the new member of my coffee family, and the coffee scene in Pikeville, Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill coming up next. Welcome to Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. This is Circus Boy Nathan coming to you from the Flying Dutchman RV. This is my weekly podcast where I come to you from a different town every week because I'm in the circus. That's right. Circus is my day job, but I have a passion for coffee. And this is kind of my weekly podcast, traveling, food, coffee, motorcycles, frozen water. This week is frozen water. We're actually in Pikeville, Kentucky this week, if you don't know where that is, which most people don't. It's kind of a sleepy little town in eastern, in the hills of eastern Kentucky, the bluegrass state, home of the Kentucky Derby. Not in Pikeville, but in Kentucky. And, so this week, I'm coming to you live. Well, it's not live to you, but live to me in Pikeville, Kentucky. It's actually sunny right now. As I said, I'm sitting in my RV, and, it's kind of, we're in the valley, I guess you could say, and, there's hills on both sides here, and, it's been really cold. This week, we'll just give you an overview of what I'm going to be on the podcast, what you can expect. First off, I'm going to talk a little bit about the coffee scene. I know I said that this week was going to be part two of Charlotte, North Carolina this weekend, which I wanted it to be, but the editing of my trip up to there talking with Frick from the Frickin' Circus podcast is taking longer than I anticipated. So I decided to do this week is going to be the Pikeville, Kentucky coffee scene, and I'm going to talk about my time in Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area there. I got to visit a roaster, and then I'll postpone finish up the Charlotte coffee scene next week. So hope that's okay. Is that okay with you guys out there? Oh, well, I can't hear you, but I'll assume it's a yes. You can nod your head in agreement wherever you're sitting, and it'll be okay. So it's gonna be okay. Don't worry. You'll get Charlotte Part Two as it's coming along. So this week in Pikeville, I'm gonna talk a little bit more about Pikeville and the history and such a little later in the podcast. Did an on location from one of the coffee shops here in town, but. This week, yeah, there's pretty much only one in Pikeville, Kentucky. There's only one coffee shop, and it's been a cold week, as I mentioned before. It's literally been freezing, and our RVs, I know I talk about the RVs quite a bit, and probably with as many problems as I've talked about, you'll probably never want to buy an RV in your life, so, so that's okay, but RVs are good, but they're not good in freezing. Oh, there goes the mailman. I have my windows, well, not the windows, but the blinds open, and the mailman is going across the way, so they really do go in rain, snow, sleet, and wind. Huh. So, yes, freezing temperatures here in Pikeville. RVs are not made to be in freezing temperatures. We've had problems with people's water hoses breaking. Basically what happens when, in a house, sometimes you have problems with the pipes, freezing, and you'll leave the faucet on. But you know, RV, you can't really do that because your gray water tank, which is where your dishwater and shower water goes to, that will freeze in your holding tank and actually eventually overflow. And so you can't do that. And you can't really leave your hoses hooked up either because they will explode. They will burst because, you know, the freezing water, of course, expands. And so the only alternative when it gets below freezing is to crank the heat up inside your RV, whether it be, a lot of us have electric heaters besides the propane heaters, and hope that the heat within the RV will keep your fresh water tank warm enough to keep it from freezing. We've had a couple people on the show that have their water pumps, which, if we're not hooked up to like a city water source, you run off your fresh water tank with your water pump, and we've even had water pumps freeze. So when that happens, then you're pretty much out of luck. You can't take showers, you can't wash dishes, you can't all the normal water activities that you would normally do within a house environment, you can't really do anymore because it's frozen. So that has been an extra challenge this week, and our rigs out here aren't really made for that. And a lot of the hoses, like, after we've been filling our water tanks like once a day, if it gets warm enough in the afternoon, we'll lay the hoses out on the road, on the pavement. There's a paved road here, and the sun will heat up the hose enough to melt the ice inside to break it up, and then you turn on the water and that flushes the ice out, and you fill your water tank, and after you're done, you have to blow out the hose so that no water freezes in for the next time you use it. So pretty crazy stuff that you would, if you weren't in the RV life, that you wouldn't have to worry about. But there's nothing better than, after filling your water tank in freezing cold temperatures, drinking a mocha latte, of course, but then drinking coffee, of course. Coffee, yes. And speaking of coffee, that was my little segue here. What do I have here today? I have, earlier this week, I had the privilege of visiting Counterculture Coffee right there in Durham, North Carolina. And while I was there, I'll talk a little bit more about counterculture in a minute. But while I was there, they have, what's it called? I'm going to get the official title because I don't want to mess it up. It's Special Reserve. It's Ethiopia Yirgacheffe. They call it the Endido Misty Valley. It's mostly what it's known by, Misty Valley. And I have to say, I am really enjoying this cup of coffee. I got more coffee. I have a French press right here sitting beside me. You can't see it, but it's right here by the microphone. And I'm going to pour another cup, and just to make anybody not drinking coffee while listening to this podcast, I'm going to make you jealous. So I'm going to put the microphone by the cup so you can, maybe this will make you thirsty for coffee. It'll give you There you go. Are you jonesing for a cup of coffee now? Uh-huh, yeah. Let me taste it again. It's good coffee. It's very good coffee. So frozen water hoses, Pikeville, Kentucky, coffee scene from Chapel Hill, new member to my coffee family. That's where I was going with that. So I'm going to talk a little more about Pikeville when I get into the coffee scene after this next segment, which is going to be the new member to my coffee family. Now, I've been talking about this for a couple weeks now, saying that, you know, I've been waiting to kind of work the kinks out before I present this new coffee family member to you. And it's pretty exciting. So hold on to your butts, and we're going to take a trip to the back of my RV. It's only about really 10 feet away, but here it is. Check it out. Hello and welcome to the back of my RV. RV once again. New addition to my coffee family. Last time you were back here in my little kitchenette area. It was what was it? Oh yeah, the grinder. The grinder was my new addition to the coffee family. Well, this week we have, as I've been hinting and alluding to for the past couple weeks on the podcast, I have a new. Pardon the mic placement. I'm still experimenting. I have a new espresso machine. My old one I had before was it was a pump driven. Basically, you have two kinds of espresso. Well, you have the pump driven and then the steam driven. The steam driven really aren't the real espresso machines. They just kind of make strong coffee. But among the pump driven espresso machines, you have manual pumps, and then you also have what are they? I guess they call them vibration pumps. And I think the vibration pumps are the most common. In any case, the manual pumps are the ones that have the big arms that you see on top of the cylinder. In any case, so I had a manual pump machine. It was a small one. It was a Hamilton Beach, and it used a thermal block to heat the water. There's a couple different ways you can heat the water. Thermal block is one way. Boiler is the most, the most common. People tend to, there's some controversy about thermal block not heating the water evenly as it goes through. It heats more quickly, boiler's best. In any case, so I was got to the point where I was looking for a machine. First of all, I couldn't get the Hamilton Beach. It was a cheaper one, only about $75 to $80, and it did okay. I was gonna put a PID in that, which is a temperature control device to get an exact temperature on the water. But I got to the point where I'm getting ready to do a coffee day here on the circus unit, and in order to do a coffee day, I need to be able to pull shots of espresso and foam milk at the same time. So I was looking for a machine that could do that efficiently without running out of steam, and no pun intended, huh? And that, you know, could also heat water better, had a little more strength in the pump, and had a little bit better, the group head would hold the heat better, which the group head is the part where, you know, the water comes out and flows through the espresso grounds. So I'm here in the back of my RV now that I've given you the update on that. I have a new espresso machine. The one I ended up going with was a KitchenAid ProLine model, which, even though it says KitchenAid, it is actually, the guts of it are Gaggia, which is an Italian manufacturer. And so the housing, which I have to say is very attractive, as far as espresso machines go, it's right up there with the and as far as looks and appearances with the, in my opinion, the Francis, which is also kind of that retro looking. Well, the KitchenAid is also that way. The brew head, which is where the portafilter are, which the portafilter is the little basket where you put the coffee grounds and tamp it in there, for you non-espresso folks out there. And then the brew head, the brew group, is kind of like this bulbous looking thing that extends out from the machine. And then the steam wand also has its own kind of, I guess, I don't know what you call it. It almost looks like a, what's it look like? Like one of those things that appear, you know, that you wrap the rope around for a boat. And then the dials has chrome dials for the gauges, for the temperature gauges. The top, it's the one I have is like a pearl metallic gray. And it has a cup warmer on top. I believe it's a passive cup warmer with a very stylish brushed steel rail that goes around the top. And the portafilter itself, which is, as I said before, the basket where you put the coffee grounds, for the non-espresso folks out there, the portafilter is all brass with a chrome on the outside. Very heavy duty. It's a 58 millimeter brass head, and it holds the heat very well, which is very important when you're making espresso, because you want the portafilter and the group head to hold as much heat as possible, so the water temperature doesn't change from the boiler on its way to the going through the espresso and pulling the shot. So I'm going to go ahead and go through the whole process here while you're listening. I may end up editing this so you don't have to sit through the whole process of making amazing espresso. Yeah, I guess it is pretty amazing when it tastes good and you do it, if I do it right. So here we go. So first, what I usually like to do is run hot water through the group head and into the cup to warm the cup up. So I'm going to turn that on there. Now I've had the machine warming up for probably closer to half hour now, half hour 40 minutes. The nice thing about this one, it warms up pretty quick, but to let it get to full temperature, I usually, after it says it's technically ready, I run some hot water through it and then let it sit another 5-10 minutes if I have the time. Although espresso's made, you know, his original intention was to be made quickly, hence the name espresso. But yeah, so we got that done. I'm going to grind the beans. I'm going to take the portafilter out. I got my towel here. I'm going to dry the inside of it out. It's very hot, which is a good thing. And I'm going to put it under the grinder. What am I grinding this week? I have, Counter Cultures Forte espresso blend. They do a Forte and Toscano. I had tried both of those when I was down at Metro. I bought, I think, a pound each or half pound when I was down there at Metro Coffee in Sarasota. So I'm going to put it under the grinder. My grinder, as if you remember, I actually have also a KitchenAid ProLine grinder. So I'm going to... Alright, I got my tamper, and I got the grounds dose in there, level them out, and I got the tamper, and you remember the tamper also from the Lake Placid episode, the new one, and push down, there we go, oh, that's pretty good, knock the grounds free, and then polish it off. The technique's getting better, slowly but surely. Alright, so I got the grounds in there. And put it up. And I tried one earlier this morning and I actually stopped up the machine. I just rebuffed my grinder. There's a way. These KitchenAid burr grinders, even though they're good grinders, they don't come in what's called stepless, which is where you can adjust it without it. It has clicks and it has 8 settings and then a click between. So really, in reality, it has about 16 settings. But for espresso, sometimes, you know, there's a, in between the clicks is where you need it to get the right grind for your espresso, and so I did a modification that I found online to make it stepless, and I have to say it's been working quite well. And I actually clogged the machine earlier. By grinding it too fine, and then. So, all right, here we go. So, loaded and ready, lock and load, and I got my timer here, and here we go. All right, it's looking good. So far, so good. A little bit thin, my taste. Just about take care of it. Not bad. Getting a little bit of what they call the Guinness effect, where you get kind of that, you see the, I don't know what it's called, the stuff rising from the bottom going up towards the top. Now the part that
is the best part of making espresso, is tasting. Here we go, let's try it. Has a nice crema on it. I'd say about, almost 10 milliliters of crema on there. Pretty good. Not bad. Not where I'd like it. Not bad. It's a good machine. As I've been saying, I've been cutting it, my teeth in on there. And I think I may eventually, once this goes through its warranty phase, put a PID on the machine, which is that temperature control device. And that's a steamer. That, ladies and gentlemen, is steam. Yes. Not superheated steam. Although sometimes that's the only thing I don't like about this machine is the water reservoir is a little small. So when you go to clean things out, it fills up pretty quickly. And the temperature gauges don't seem to be quite accurate. They have, like in this case, the temperature, once it really heats up, the thing will hover right around where on this machine, it would probably be around 250. I'd say 250 degrees, which in reality would definitely burn your espresso. But when it comes out, it doesn't taste burnt. So I'm thinking that the gauges are just, they're accurate in the sense that they tell you when it's hot and not hot. But it's as far as actual temperature, I don't think they're too accurate. Other than that, I mean, the design looks great. The pump has been plenty strong. And the steam has been great. I'm not too crazy about the steam wand on here. It's made supposed to be one of those no fuss steam wands, but it comes kind of hard when you're trying to do real fine latte foam and so forth. But the water reservoir holds a nice amount of water. Pretty easy access, and the machine looks good, and it's very stable. It's very heavy duty. It's all cast iron from the base all the way up to the top, so I might have to take a picture and put it up on the website. But yeah, so welcome to the new member of my coffee family. All right, so welcome to On Location from Out to Lunch Coffee House here in Pikeville, Kentucky. So as I was mentioning, I'm going to get to the coffee scene in a second of Raleigh-Durham and Chapel Hill and Pikeville, but I want to talk a little bit about Pikeville this week. As I was saying earlier, it's pretty cold. It's pretty cold this week down in the freezing temperatures, and yeah, just to give you an idea, Pikeville is kind of in like a horseshoe shape between the mountains. And just to give you a little background of the town, is mainly a mining town. It's known for its coal mines and such. And kind of its big claim to fame is, one of them is the hometown of the feud, that famous blood feud, vendetta, I guess you could say, between the Hatfield and McCoys. Which was that long bloody feud. I don't know all the details of it, and I'm sure you can just go on Google and Wikipedia and look it up. But they celebrate that every year in what they call Hillbilly Days. That's their biggest festival of the year. It's Hillbilly Days here in Pikeville, Kentucky. And they're also the other big thing that if you go to the little tourism booth, which is funny, it's right downtown, the tourist booth, and it's in a old railroad car. You can go in there and all kinds of good information and very friendly people. And the other thing is called the Cut Through. And the Cut Through, what it was, is this big project where they actually literally moved
about 12 million cubic yards of rock and dirt, which is actually one of the biggest land-moving projects completed in the Western Hemisphere. And it's right there. The only two other big projects are the Panama Canal and the Big Dig up there and in Boston. So it's a pretty big deal. And they actually rerouted a river because the city was getting flooded every year. And so they, back in, it took about 14 years, and they completed it back in 87. And there's actually a lookout up there you can go and check it out, but allows the highway and so forth to go through there. So pretty cool stuff. So it's definitely a sleepy little town. And as far as the coffee scene in Pikeville, well, there's, I mean, it's a small town. There's only about 6,500 people, and there's only about one coffee shop, and I'm sitting in it right now, which is the Out to Lunch coffee shop. And go ahead and we'll just dive right into it here. Let me open my little books, little book of reviews. Come on, you have to bear with me. This is always live. Well, as I said, live to me. Okay, so Pikeville, Kentucky, Out to Lunch Coffee House. Now, this is a cool little place. It's only been here since about maybe last, I think, April. And a very nice place. A lot of tables. They have free Wi-Fi. They have lunch up till 2 o'clock, and they have you can get muffins. And I'm enjoying a piece of what is it, pumpkin cheesecake and some espresso. So yeah, good stuff. So as far as the mocha latte goes, I wrote here, mocha latte in Pikeville, exclamation mark, and huzzah. Served auto to go cup. They ask on the whipped cream, no foam, very weak espresso taste, and they only serve it in 12 and 20 ounce. Okay, chocolate, Ghirardelli's, just a little weak all around. So that's a mocha latte. And that's pretty much it for Pikeville, as far as Pikeville coffee goes. But it's kind of a cool little town to visit. Wintertime, as I said earlier, it gets cold. So, yeah, now moving on, earlier in the week, earlier in the week I was in Raleigh, North Carolina. Raleigh, it's kind of, in North Carolina, you kind of have Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill all within a half hour drive of each other, kind of like a triangle there. And I got to spend some time there 2 weeks ago when I got to visit the Blue Show and visit Frick with Frickin' Circus, which will be, hopefully that'll be next week once I get that all edited up for your listening pleasure. But while I was in Raleigh visiting Frick, I got to check out two places that day, and then I came back the following week, which is this past week, and I got to check out a few more places, and I had the privilege of visiting Counterculture, which I'll talk about after I do the coffee scene there. So the coffee scene in Raleigh, Chapel Hill, Durham. Well, I just say, no, I have to say I didn't get to visit all of the coffee places. It's almost physically impossible to do, especially on my schedule where I have to travel around and on the motorcycle. And it was cold too, I have to say. It's pretty cold bike weather. Any case, but Morning Times was a place downtown Raleigh, and a very cool place. They had a very retro kind of how would you describe it? Almost I guess it was like Anthropology, how they have kind of have their kitchen section. It had that kind of, if you've ever been in one of those stores, kind of had that kind of feel to it, almost like the retro Italian kitchen-esque kind of feel, if that's even a a descriptor. You walk in, and it's a very small downstairs. They have just basically the counter and a few quick seats there just to drink, and then if you head upstairs, there's a lot of space. They have chairs, a couple couches, leather couches, hardwood floors, windows that look out onto the street there, right downtown, and there's bathrooms up there, and just very cool surroundings. A lot of creative thought went into making that space up there. So it was very, people kind of having business meetings, you know, during the daytime, and great coffee too, actually. I wrote here on their mocha latte, I wrote, what a delightful drink, served in-house cup, great looking foam, But sadly, no latte art. The foam was tight enough for that, but anyways, great espresso taste. Chocolate was okay. Overall, it had a great taste and texture, but it was unbalanced and too chocolate heavy. That was the only thing. So I gave them a 4.4 beans. It was a very nice drink. So next place, moving on. Later that night on the way back, I hit Cafe Driadi in Chapel Hill. And it's a very cool place. As you're going down, I can't remember the name of the road now. It's been too long. If you're coming from the north off the highway, I know it's on the right side. And you have to kind of know where you're going because you won't see it from the road. There's a small sign, which at night is lit, but it's very small, almost the size of a mailbox. And then you make a right turn and you go back a little ways. I think it's a flower shop or maybe antique shop that's on the front of the property, and they're on the back. And it's almost like, well, my first impression, if you ever played the game Myst, if you're into adventure gaming, it reminded me of like a little hut that you would go to in the middle of the forest. It has, you know, a few lights shining on it and a very small, very kind of intimate setting. And you walk in, and it's really cool. They have all kinds of metal sculpture on the ceiling there, and just, I won't say bare bones, but it's definitely no frills. You know, it's not kind of not the kind of cafe that sells little trinkets. You know, it's basically they have great coffee, great espresso, and you know, a few pastries here and there. So very, very cool surroundings. They have tables. They have kind of like a screened-in porch in the front there, and they also have seating in the back. And very friendly baristas who know their way around espresso machines. So very cool. Very good. Now, the mocha latte here, I wrote, I'm confused. This place makes great espresso, which they do. I tried their espresso by itself, and it was good. But they pulled the shot for the mocha latte straight into powdered chocolate and then proceeded to mix it in with the milk. So it's not so good. Kind of like chocolate milk. I was kind of disappointed. Served in a house cup, and they did ask on whipped cream, but not the caliber I expected. So, yeah, they serve great espresso, but their mocha latte isn't so good. So I gave them a 3.7 beans. Next up, I tried this past week then when I was in Chapel Hill. Two places there. The first one was Open Eye Cafe, and very cool feel to this. There's definitely, I mean, obviously there's a big college population within that area, and I was there about, what would have been maybe 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, and it was crowded. It was packed, actually, and it was like Tuesday night maybe. So definitely the college crowd hangs out there, studies, goes there to, you know, talk about, I don't know, world peace or whatever they're working on. But any case, very cool feel to it. Definitely a coffee shop, and they do serve wine and just minimal food type stuff. I think they had like a fruit tort in the case and like some actual just fruit, like bananas and apples and such. Great coffee, actually. I wrote on their mocha latte here, I wrote, wow, best I've had in a while. Served in-house cup, great smooth and subtle espresso taste. Chocolate was a little heavy, good tight foam, but the chocolate was frothed in the foam, which I wrote as a no-no in latte land, as I always say, which resulted in a little chocolate-heavy taste. But overall, great drink. I gave them 4.5 beans. So it was good taste, but the only thing was a little chocolate heavy. I think if they would have included the chocolate in the drink without the foam, I think it would have been the balance would have been a little bit better rather than heating up the chocolate. But it was a very great drink and a very cool place. Kind of a hip feel to it, you know, and also a no frills kind of place, you know, just the coffee, the seats. I think there was some music, maybe not, I don't remember, but yeah, great place to hang out. Next up is a Paget Station Cafe. And very cool feel to this place. This is more of a cafe, I guess, than I would say a coffee house, like Open Eye. And you walk in, and it kind of feels like, my first impression was Europe, very very European. They have the copper tile ceiling, the kind of the red paint on the walls with the black, I believe it was a black tile floor. I know the countertops are black. I'm trying to remember now every little detail. But it had just a very kind of upscale cafe, almost like a, I don't know, something you'd envision in Europe, you know, with some seating outside and quite an extensive food menu as well. And they boast organic and fair trade coffees. Although I'm not sure who the roaster is or where they get their beans from. But I tried the food. The food was very good and very friendly staff. And in the evenings, they will actually wait on you at the table. So very nice environment, very nice environment. Now, the drink here, I wrote, disappointed with this drink. It was served in a house cup, very little foam, but there was etching on top. Espresso was there, but dominated by too much chocolate. And the chocolate was okay. They used Ghirardelli's, but they just put too much in the drink. So I wrote, gave them a 3.7 beans. 3.7 beans. So that finishes up the coffee scene for Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill. And now, granted, I like I said, I couldn't visit every place, but a delightful surprise. I got to visit Counterculture Coffee. Now, if you're asking, who in the heck is Counterculture Coffee? Well, they're a roaster. If you remember my interview with Corey from Crave Coffee Shop up there in Pennsylvania, and he mentioned that is their roaster for all their coffee that they serve there at Crave Coffee House, as well as I think I mentioned, or was it Metro as well, down there. And and Peter and Corey raved about the Counterculture, about the coffee and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, I'm in the neighborhood, you know, call them up and see if they had some time for a lone circus coffee drinking traveler. And sure enough, it was. I had a great time. I have to send a big shout out to Catherine, who took me around there and showed me the facility, and got to see the roasters and where they store the beans, and they actually have a shop where they maintain and fix espresso machines, because when the cafe goes with when they set up a cafe, they provide the espresso machines and maintain them, and got to see their cupping room, and very good stuff. And I got to try the Misty Valley, so you could probably hear the milk in the background. But so very good stuff. I had a good time there. And if you want to check out, you know, find out more about them, let me find the website for you here as I'm talking. This is fix this here. Uh oh. Okay, here we go. Counterculture, there we go. Just if you want to find out more about them, go to counterculturecoffee.com. And if you want to find out if there is a shop that serves their stuff near you, you can just, there's a place in there, you can email them at questions@counterculturecoffee.com. And I'm sure they'd be happy to point you to a place that serves their roast in there. So I definitely want to send a big thank you to Liz and Julie and Catherine while I was making me feel welcome in the tour around there. It was good times. I really enjoyed that tour. So it's very nice of them. So that about wraps up the podcast for this week for Pikeville, Kentucky. Coming weeks, we're going to be, we have a split week next week between Evansville, Indiana, and where else? Shelbyville, Tennessee. That should be interesting. I've never been to Shelbyville. It's about an hour southeast of Nashville, I think. And then the following week, we are out in Iowa. And then after that, I think we're down in Texas, I believe. So it's going to be... going to be interesting. I'm going to have to postpone the coffee tasting trip to the grocery store maybe for the Iowa podcast. And as I promised, Charlotte, North Carolina Part 2 will be coming out too. So, cool. Well, I'm going to leave you with Mod Dog from last week. We had... what was it? Snow Day. And one of the ones I wanted to include in the special Mod Dog music review extravaganza was Orient Express, but I couldn't fit it in last week's podcast, so I'm going to put it here. It's one of my favorite. It has a, can't remember the name. It's a Japanese instrument that it features. It's not erhu. It's a, I don't know. I'll find out for you for next week. So, yeah, check it out. And until next week, as always... Oh, yeah, I forgot my contact information. You can check out the website at bestmochalatte.podomatic.com. Or there's a call-in number on that website. Or, as always, you can check out the blog for this podcast where I put up the reviews and usually have a picture of the place at bestmochalatte.blogspot.com. There we go. Okay. So now you have all the contact info. So, until next week, drink what you like and like what you drink. Take care. Bye.